Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest this morning is Patty Handy. She's a single mom, a money coach, and the author of How to Ditch Your Allowance and Be Richer Than Your Parents. Patty has a bachelor's degree in accounting, followed by a combined 25 years in the banking and mortgage area. As a pass holder of Series 7 and Series 63 licenses, she has most recently served as a senior mortgage advisor for over 7 years. She holds a California real estate broker's license and is also a CTA-certified life coach. She's here today to talk about her life's journey, her new book, How to Ditch Your Allowance and Be Richer Than Your Parents, which is 9 wealth-building tools to make a teen rich, and a passion about wanting to make a positive difference in the world we live in. Good morning, Patty. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio.
Good morning, Johnny. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
It's my pleasure. I want to apologize ahead of time to all our listeners and you. I'm having a very coarse voice this morning because over the weekend, my allergies start acting up when the change of weather here in Dallas, and so I'm sound terrible, but I actually feel good, but I just sound terrible.
You don't sound bad. You sound fine.
I really enjoyed reading your book. I like the way you got to the core of everything, and, you know, most financial books that I've read, they're kind of difficult to read, but I find yours entertaining and an easy read. And what I like about it is that you're able to sort of use some of the scriptures, actually, as your lead to the things that you were talking about. But, Patty, this morning, what I'd like to do is to get started to talk about your life's journey a little bit. Please walk us through your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay, sure. Well, first off, thank you for those kind words about the book. I'm glad you enjoyed that. From my life, childhood to present moment, I come from a wonderful, huge family. We're all very, very close. We had 5 kids in my family. I was number 3 of 5, am number 3 of 5, and it's been a really neat experience. I get to share this. I have an older sister and a younger sister and an older brother and a younger brother. So I get to taste all of the dynamics of having the older and the younger, you know, sibling, which is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And very, very, again, close family. My parents have been married over 50 years, and they are still alive and well, doing great. My dad worked very, very hard all his life. He's a PhD in physics, a brilliant man. My mom was a stay-at-home mom with, you know, 5 of us kids. She had her hands very, very full. And as a result of being parents of 5 kids with a single income, they had to be masters at managing money. And they taught us very well on how to master money. They taught us how to respect money and other things in life, obviously, besides just the money aspect. But I tie that a lot into the book and just the way I teach money coaching, because it's something that's so important to understand the entire picture of our life. And that is, like I talked about in the book, you know, giving back and showing kindness and being grateful and, mm-hmm. and sharing your strengths and talents. I went on to college. As you mentioned, I graduated with an accounting degree. My intention was to be a CPA. I had some internship opportunities and found that that was not my calling. I was not dealing with people enough. I felt like I was pushing paper, and I just loved dealing with people. I loved helping others and very social person. So I find myself locked into a box. You know, pushing papers was not my cup of tea. So I transitioned into banking, working at an investment banking firm and then working at some large banks. And got married out of college, and 5 or 6 years later had a beautiful son. And actually, it was probably a little longer than 5 or 6 years later, but I had a wonderful son. And unfortunately, at about 18 months old, I went through a very devastating divorce. It was completely from left field. I was not prepared for it. At the time, I had left my job to have my son and was enjoying being at home with him and really had the desire and intention to be a stay-at-home mom. I wanted him to be completely raised by me. And so I left corporate America after many, many years and After the divorce, I just didn't have it in my heart to put him in daycare. I couldn't do that and go back to corporate America. So I found a way to stay at home and be with him and also work, and that was when I got into the mortgage industry and was able to balance the timing of, clients and seeing them and visiting them, but talking, you know, most of the time from home. And it was really a great way of combining both. So I did mortgages and real estate combined over the next few years. My son now is 13 years old, fast forward to today. And I've been at home with him all this time, and he's now in junior high school. And he's a wonderful little man, but I have to say that I'm his mom. So that's what I say. But it's been a wonderful journey. You know, certainly there's been challenges with that. And you know, one of the things that I want to say about the divorce, when you go through a divorce, if anyone's listening has ever been through a divorce or knows somebody, which I have to imagine, you know, they know somebody if they haven't been through it themselves, it's a horrific time. You are dealing with emotions. You are dealing with your physical, financial strains. I mean, everything is affected in your world. And I had an 18-month-old to boot, which was my driving force to get out of bed in the morning. You know, I just it was one of those things. And although my life was turned upside down with, even with finances, as much as I was the money manager in the house, when assets are split in half and you have the expense of the divorce, and I was out of work for about a year because I was at home with my son, I struggled financially. And obviously I was a mess physically and emotionally, but I had a sense of peace knowing that I had the financial foundation in place. I had the financial wherewithal and the tools I knew I needed to get through that time. And it brought me a sense of peace in a very turbulent time in my life. I know that sounds very strange, but it did bring me a sense of peace. So I did, in time, not only survive that situation on all levels, including financially, but I went on to thrive. And it was certainly an experience that, I have grown from, and anyone who's been through a divorce can probably look back and say the same thing. But that's one of the things that drives me as far as my passion with teaching people money skills and money management. I want them to have those tools in their toolbox, if you will, to deal with life. And that was one of the things that motivated me to instill in my son. I don't want him to ever struggle financially. And I know life throws things at him and will throw things at him and every other person in this world. So the more prepared we are in understanding money management, the less chance that will throw us off our, keister.
And, I understand.
And put us in a problem.
No, as a single mom, I mean, I understand you, you made the decision. Obviously, you started out as wanting to be a stay-at-home mom, and this is a big switch from being a stay-at-home mom, and all of a sudden, you're working, you're divorced, and you have to kind of be, assume the role of being a single parent.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you touch, broadly as far as, things that, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you find the strength to stay focused and assume the responsibility of being a single parent? Because obviously it's very, very challenging in this, this point in your life, because you're being away from work for about a year, and you know how competitive it is, because it's like if you're not on the treadmill of life or career, whatever you want to call it, it's difficult to get back up and get going again.
Right. Well, it's funny. This is where the mama bear role kicks in. we do everything we can and we need to do to protect our babies. And my son was my motivation and my inspiration to become a better individual, to become a mom that I could be proud of, that he could be proud of. And I found myself just using the leverage, if you will, of wanting to be the best possible parent that I could. And now, being a single parent, Dad moved out of the area. So although he was in the picture, every other weekend, the day-to-day thing was on me. So I just, you know, in every fiber of my being, wanted to give and do everything I possibly could for my son. So that was what motivated me. I mean, that was enough leverage, you know, to make me just move forward, you know, put my head down and move forward. And in doing that, I had to take care of myself, because if I didn't take care of myself, then I couldn't be anything to him. So there was that balance of trying to take care of me, try to take care of him, obviously, you know, the mortgage and other expenses and all that. And you just take one day at a time, and you just move forward one step in front of the other.
Do you have, you know, as a mother, did you develop your own mothering skills, or did you draw experiences from your mom or your sisters, you know, while going through all this?
Yeah, my mom and my sisters were a huge influence on me. They're great role models. My mom taught me, you know, so much over the course of obviously my life. Unconditional love. She gave everything to her kids. To this day, you know, we're very, very close. So yes, absolutely. And they were instrumental in helping me with my son as well when I was, getting back into the mortgage world, or going to get into the mortgage world, and, you know, having to go with clients. They would take care of him and watch over him, and I didn't trust him with anybody but family. And they were huge, absolutely. And to this day, you know, still huge influences and a large part of my life.
Now, you are an accomplished woman, continuously, you know, educating yourself with the need to stay informed and be very competitive in the mortgage and banking and the real estate industry, obviously. How do you balance all this, what I call the balancing act of, you know, of having a career and motherly love? Because being a single parent, and of course, I've known people in the mortgage banking industry, I've known people in the real estate industry, and the hours are kind of odd in some ways. And in addition to that, obviously, it's very competitive. How do you find yourself balancing your career and motherly love?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. Sometimes it's hard to. I mean, honestly, sometimes there are days where I just think, oh, my gosh, this is really hard. And any working mom would say the same thing. You know, some days are just completely smooth sailing and there's no issues, and then there's a hiccup and you find yourself just, you know, struggling. And what I do is, you know, there's obviously the long hours. And there's, you know, there's some days where you put in more hours than others. It's a lot about time management and prioritizing the day. I have a lot of help from my family. As I mentioned, I have the two sisters who live close, and my mom and dad who live close that are instrumental. My son now is 13 years old. He's a little more independent, so I don't need to watch over him, like with homework and whatnot, but like I used to. But it's a very delicate balancing act. When I'm with my son, I try to be very, very present with him. And I tend to have a mind that races and is always thinking about various things. But when I'm with him, I want to be with him. So the mommy guilt that you know, come and go are minimized. And not to say I don't have any, because I do. I think every mom who is also a working mom has that, where they have those challenges. But it's definitely a situation where it's just, again, one day at a time. Again, it's prioritizing, it's money management, it's time management, and when I'm with my son, I'm with him completely.
Well, it sounds like you're a very determined woman. So, you know, it's like sort of a failure is not an option, so to speak. and you have that drive. And also, of course, now you are a certified life coach. Please tell us a little bit more about that, and what kind of client base are you working with?
Well, I actually got certified a couple years ago as a life coach, and it was a desire of mine to, you know, work with people on a deeper level. I've always worked with people on various levels. Of course, as a mortgage broker, I deal with them from a financial point, but you get to know your clients. But I wanted to work with them on a deeper level, and I worked with a lot of divorced single women when it came to money management and going through their issues, as I was one and am one, and I, you know, related obviously to that, you know, very, very easily and resonated with them. And it was something that I, again, just really did to make a bigger difference, if you will, and work with people. Right now, my client base is primarily teens, and I focus again on money coaching for that market. I want to prepare these teens with every tool I possibly can, so that they don't struggle the way many are struggling today financially. I want to eliminate that if possible.
I understand. Well, I mean, you are the you got the inspiration and as well as motivation, I guess, to write the book from your son. But in your new book, you know, you start talking about the mind, preparing our mindset for something, you know, good to come in. And the concept that you use is being consciously grateful. And I believe, you know, based on just talking to you for a few minutes here, I can see where that came from. Why don't you just tell us a little bit more about that concept that you have about consciously grateful?
Sure. There are so many things that get thrown out at us in life, and I unfortunately see a lot of people today focus on what they don't have and what's wrong in their world, and I want and hope that people will turn that around. I live in a place where I call it attitude of gratitude, and it's the simple things. Your cup of coffee in the morning, you know, the comfort of your sheets in your bed. I mean, just finding the simple things that you can be grateful for and appreciative of, and it awakens the heart and the soul to what we have, and not what we don't have. And I think if you start to focus on all those things that you do have, and you show appreciation for the things that you do have and not what you don't have and what everyone else has that you, you know, don't want or you don't have that you do want, then, you know, the world will start to work with you. And, you know, whatever your religious beliefs are, whether it's God or whether it's the universe or whatever your personal beliefs are, when you show appreciation, and you show gratitude truly from the heart and soul that you are truly grateful for things that you do have, you're blessed with more. You're blessed with those things that you can be grateful for. And I'm certainly not saying to be grateful to get more by any sort.
Right.
You know, it's about truly from your heart and soul being very thankful for what it is that you do have. And regardless of your situation, there's always things to be grateful for. And, you know, even through the midst of my divorce and the ugliest of times, I found things to be grateful for. And that mind shift, that awareness shift helps you come through and helps you just be in a better place.
I agree with that. I think a lot of times we tend to live in the future or live in the past, and we're not living in the present moment.
Absolutely.
And living in the present moment is all about being thankful for what we have versus what we don't have or what we wish we would have.
Right.
So it's a little bit different, and I agree with that. And to me, regardless of however you want to, where your journey is going to take you, the mind having that conscious, you know, making that conscious decision of being grateful of what you have at the present is the platform, the foundation, actually a stepping stone, so to speak, to get, you know, you to wherever you need to go. You also talk about spending money wisely, keeping a good record and tracking everything. I guess it's like what Benjamin Franklin says, a penny saved is a penny earned. Give us some example about this.
Well, it absolutely is, much like Ben Franklin's comment. You know, teens, I find in working with teens, we have an issue with spending a lot of money when they're out with their friends, and they don't realize where it goes. And it's going to, you know, through fast food, coffee stops, juice stops, things like that are great examples. And oftentimes, they don't realize how much money they go through. So what I do with what I call my spending tracker is I have them track it for just 2 weeks. This is not a long-term thing because they wouldn't do this long-term. But, you know, for 2 weeks I have them track what they spend. And I'm talking about everything down to the, you know, 50-cent candy bar. and, you know, when they bought it, why they bought it, was it a need or a want, how much it was. And then after 2 weeks' time, I have them add it all up. And it's very, very often that they look back and go, wow, that was, you know, I just blew, you know, $50 on food or you know, and they don't realize it because they're out with their friends and they think, oh, it's $3 here, $4 there, you know, it's no big deal. And
right.
And then I turn that around and I say, look, if you had taken that money and you invested that instead in this, you know, market or and you put it in here and this is what this would, you know, I show compounding interest, you know, and I show them what that would have
mm-hmm.
amounted to over a certain period of time, it's always eye-opening. So it's, again, creating an awareness, and that's what the spending money wisely is about. It's creating an awareness and a certain mindset and a lifestyle choice and a lifestyle mm-hmm. habit so that they start to think twice, and it absolutely is. A penny saved is preserved.
Well, you know, I know as a kid growing up, I track everything. But I never want anything, though. I always need everything. So it's a little bit different. And I understand from a mom perspective versus a child perspective, and this is something interesting because I know in my book, and I talked about this, and all my moms, my nine moms, has a slush fund, you know, for the rainy days. And, mm-hmm. of course, in my family, that's been used all the time because I tend to need everything, like I was saying, you know, I don't, I never want anything. I need everything, and so it changes the dynamics a little bit. And
yeah.
And I remember that, you know, the way we were taught about money, you know, saving, putting things, pennies in the, you know, in the piggy bank and stuff like that, growing up.
Right. Right.
And of course, I never used my money. I always used my mom's money.
<Of course>. That's funny.
So it's kind of interesting, you know, where you talk about spending money wisely and everything else. But I do like the phrase that you use in your book, which it truly gives us a real picture of what's very wrong in our world today.
Mm-hmm.
The rich does rule over the poor, and the borrower is definitely the servant of the lender. And, of course, I'm kind of using it a little bit different here, but it is from Proverbs 22:7.
Mm-hmm.
Please give us some of the great information you have in your book with regards to this.
Well, you know, I use this as the part of the title of the section regarding credit cards. And, you know, it's no secret that we have a problem today in our society with credit card debt and credit card mm-hmm. abuse. And, unfortunately, the teens, our kids, are following suit and watching what their parents do and have done and creating the same mistakes that many have. And, you know, it comes down to something I just mentioned a minute ago, and that was lifestyle choices.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look hard at our lifestyle and make some choices. There are going to be sacrifices. We don't get to have what we always need in your perspective or want.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there is a need for change because if this continues, if this credit continues the way it is, you know, we are servants to that. And
mm-hmm.
we then, you know, it becomes a vicious cycle that is very, very difficult, if not impossible, to get out of at some point later. And, you know, we're seeing today all-time high of foreclosures and, you know, bankruptcies and obviously the job losses are a factor. But
mm-hmm.
Much of that is what we and how we spend our money and how we utilize, you know, those credit cards and honestly abuse the credit cards. And in essence, when we do that, we abuse ourselves.
No, it's true. Actually, when I remember when I was in college, and this is very interesting because I came here to go to college from Malaysia, and what, at 18, and within, I don't know, 9 months or so, I actually have like 15 credit cards. I'm not
wow.
kidding you.
Wow.
I have credit cards for each gas company.
Oh, my goodness.
And I have credit cards for all the department stores, you know, Penny's and Sears and you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a credit card for one of the ones I had was kind of funny. Yeah, oh, for, you know, a tire place. Too.
Oh my goodness.
And but I mean I was, you know, I was responsible now, you know. I didn't do anything, and I actually helped a friend to get a credit card. And it was kind of weird, but I was able to do that. But of course, I had good credit, and I was working too, you know, while going to school and everything else. But it was, it seems to be very easy to get it. And when I was in Malaysia growing up, of course, we just strictly deal with cash, not credit. And so it really amounts, you know, that's a dynamic change there in terms of all of a sudden, you know, you're spending all this money you don't see that you spend in, at the end of the month, and you get the bill. Is a, it's a different dynamics. But till this day, because of the fact that I have so many credits, I think that helped me in terms of long credit history, whatever you want to call it. You know?
Right, right.
I think that helps tremendously. But coming back to what we talked about, I know you talked about good debts and bad debts.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell us the difference between the two?
Well, good debt is a debt that you take on to help you make more money. It works for you. It's like using leverage. Good debt would be an example of a rental property. If you were to buy a home and take out a mortgage, that's good debt because that is helping you to grow your investment real estate portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's many advantages to owning rental property. So that would be a good debt. Or if you were putting money into a business, that is utilizing debt to grow your company or your investments into a company. Bad debt is credit card debt. It's your car loans. You know, Robert Kiyosaki talks about your home mortgage being bad debt because that's not helping you make more money.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure I would be bold enough to say I'm going against what he says, but I kind of am. I think that your home is a good debt. Your home is appreciating in value, although it's not making you cash flow money because your home does not cash flow. But
right.
You are investing in your home, which over time does appreciate, and that is something that you know is your capital. So I personally don't look at your private mortgage as bad debt, but credit card, car loans, that is all bad debt. That does nothing for you other than, you know, cost you interest and possibly finance charges, late fees, whatnot, and that's definitely a bad debt.
I agree with both of you guys because I think you're right. You start out as being a good debt in the sense that, you know, you have a single mortgage on the house. However, the bankers comes in and offer you second and third mortgages.
Ah, yeah, that's bad debt.
And that's when you get over, you know, the actual value of your house.
Right.
And you leverage out. So I think that would be a very classic example how what started out as a good debt ended up being a bad debt. And you don't even realize it because it's sort of a, I wouldn't say it's sneaky, but it's just you know, a different way of doing business.
Yeah, and it's one of these situations where that's where the mortgage lenders, mortgage brokers, were not doing their clients any favors, if you will.
Right.
Very, very misleading, and yet it was the homeowner's responsibility as well to have the common sense to know that borrowing against your house to tap it out and even be upside down over time. And, you know, we didn't know the market was going to turn the way it did. No one knew.
Right.
But we also knew that it was, you know, I think instinctively wrong to keep borrowing against our home equity and, you know, tap that out. So the homeowners should take responsibility as well as the lenders and the mortgage brokers. There's many people who've, you know, had their fingers in that decision. But, yes, you're right. It's that kind of situation where that does become very bad debt. And, you know, I'll take that one step further. I have read several situations, and this has to be very, very carefully done.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen situations where people have borrowed against their home, who had a lot of equity in their home, borrowed against the equity in their home to purchase rental property.
Mm-hmm.
And if done correctly, that's very wise.
Right.
That can be something that's a very good decision if it's done correctly.
Right.
Because you are, again, taking equity into a home that's just sitting there and not working for you in any capacity,
right.
and you put it to work for you. You buy
right.
rental property. So if you're doing this from an educated position and you know what you're doing, that could be a very, very smart strategy. If you
right.
aren't careful with it, you can work backwards and hurt yourself.
Right. Well, it is a business for the mortgage bankers, so obviously what they're interested in is, you know, for themselves. And I think I could say that, you know, going back and as a child, I was telling you, I don't want anything. I need everything. So if there's an opportunity there, you know, but it's true.
Yeah.
You know, as an adult, we get into that situation too.
Yeah.
When someone comes up and present to you a situation where, guess what? I can get you this.
right, yeah.
So you need everything.
That's where the emotional spending comes into play, and that's,
mm-hmm.
that's where people get in trouble, yeah.
Right. And what that brings us to, there's a, you know, you mentioned something about paying yourself first.
Yes.
Can everyone do this?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the common habits, money habits, that many millionaires have. And it is the prioritizing that you pay yourself, even before you pay your mortgage or your rent. You pay yourself first every single month. I don't care if it's $10 a month or $100 a month or more or less. You get in the habit
mm-hmm.
of making that payment to yourself, and I suggest strongly that it be done automatically. It's not a situation where you write yourself a check every month, but you have it automatically set up with your bank and your institution that you send the money to,
mm-hmm.
the mutual fund company. You have it deducted from your bank account to your mutual fund company, and it just gets wired automatically on whatever date of the month you specify, and you do that every single month. And that is the power of good saving habits, that, you know, your money will then begin to work for you. You have compounding interest and time working for you, and you'll be amazed. And if this is what I try to drive home to teens, if you get this habit very young, it's amazing how compounding interest works and how that just becomes, you know, free money over time, and how portfolios can grow into the millions. And I use that example, and I show many samples in my DVD program how that works. And
mm-hmm.
most kids and adults, quite frankly, are just in awe of it, because they've heard about compounding interest. They know it's good. They kind of understand the concept. But when they see the hard numbers
mm-hmm.
and they see the graphs, it's like, holy Toledo, I didn't realize that's
mm-hmm.
really what happened. And you know, so, yes, absolutely pay yourself first. Again, I don't care if it's $5, $10, whatever. Just get in that habit, and then as you can put more money in every month, then add that and start getting into that habit.
No, in your book, you did go at great length and talked about the art of savings and explaining investment basics to everyone. Regards to the needs to know what they are going into. Please give us an example, a few examples actually, about this and what good basic investment strategies that everyone needs to know.
Well, one of the my favorite strategies was the one we just discussed, and that's paying yourself first. And I talk about this again in the book and the DVD program, and I'll use this example that we talked about earlier in the conversation, and that is showing teens about their spending. And if they took that $4 a day that they would spend on coffee or hamburgers or whatever, and they turn around and they decided to invest that money instead, and I show them that little money becomes big money. And here's how compounding interest works. If I took, say, that $4 a day,
mm-hmm.
and just at 5 days a week, I didn't even use all 7 days, but just 5 days a week, that's $20 a week times 4 weeks, that's $80 a month that these kids are spending on food and whatever else. And so I show that $80 a month over, say, just a five-year period, let's say they were trying to save up for a new car. So a five-year period, if they had invested that in a stock fund that earned them 10% interest over that five-year period, that $4 a day after 5 years becomes over $6,400.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is the art of saving. That
right.
is how compounding interest works. That's where that mindset of spending has to be altered. The other thing that I talk about is dollar cost averaging, and
mm-hmm.
that's another strategy that is real key, and that's how the pay it yourself first thing works as well. If you pay yourself every single month, you're averaging, if you will, your investments. And I say that if you're investing in, say, a stock mutual fund,
mm-hmm.
You're not buying at the high, you're not buying at the low, you are averaging over time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you make the same investment every single month on the same day of the month with the same dollar amount, you'll be averaging your investment. And that's a very, very wonderful strategy to put into place as far as your saving and your investment plans. So that's another thing that we talk about in terms of the art of saving. And those are two very, very simple strategies that if you know, kids or adults understand, can be huge in terms of just their wealth building over time.
What is the age limit for a child to be able to, I mean, you know, obviously, I don't know, I guess in the bank you could open up a savings account, but as far as mutual funds and stuff like that, is there an age limit for a child to get into it?
A mutual fund, my understanding is no. You can open a child savings account in their name with anything. It has to be a custodian account.
I got you.
If it's, I mean, you would want it to be a custodian account as a parent, as custodian, if they're very young.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're opening up a college fund for your child and you start at age two, obviously it's not in their name, it's custodian with the parent. In terms of them going and getting like a checking account, various lenders, credit unions have a little bit different role than some of the larger banks,
mm-hmm.
And it's going to vary from lender to lender. Typically, you can open up an account at like 13 with a debit card,
mm-hmm.
With the parent on the account as well as custodian. And at 16, they can, if they can prove with a driver's license and a job, they can have their own account in their own name. And then 18 is typically the age to get a credit card.
Mm, okay.
And that would be on their own, not having a parent on it.
How about in itself, like savings you were talking about? So this is basically, does the parent has advantage of doing this in terms of tax purposes and everything else? You know how it's structured where some people are doing certain ways because they're advised by the accountants and everything else. So in your strategy of savings, is this beneficial for the parent to be actually involved with something like this?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, there's no question. This is advantageous for everybody. I would certainly check with your CPA to see what the best way to vest, to have the vesting on the account would be. My understanding is that if you open a like a Kugma account, which is a custodian account for a child, like a college fund, if it's in the child's name with the parent as custodian, it's their money,
mm-hmm.
and you have to use it for school purposes. At 18, they can take that money and do whatever they want with it, and the parent doesn't have any say. That's my understanding. I would check with your CPA on that. But yeah, you want to be careful how you vest it so that you have access as a parent still, if that child decides that he wants to run away and take that money and go to Africa or go somewhere and you know, do something. They have to, you know, put it towards college or their house or their car, whatever it is that you know want them to do with that. But if it's their money, their hard-earned money, and they want to open up a mutual fund or a savings account, they can do that. Certainly a savings account, they can do it at any age with the local bank or credit union. Mutual funds, I'm not 100% sure on the mutual fund. If it's a stock fund, if you need, you know, at age 6 or 7,
mm-hmm,
a parent
mm-hmm.
on that. That would
mm-hmm.
be that's something that I would have to look into. It's a good question.
How about, I mean, these are obviously, you know, I mean, you have to have a little fun here to do this and so
mm-hmm.
forth, you know, money to do this. On the average, say, someone who is, you know, I know the president talk about middle class. And the definition of middle class ranges anywhere between someone that earns total household income less than, I think, about 125 or 150 and less. But let's be more specific here. What if your household income is about only 50 to 75,000 a year? Can someone do something like this?
do what? Like pay yourself first?
Savings, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, no question. No question. It's certainly harder because
mm-hmm.
they have less to work with, but
right.
They have to be more creative in terms of their spending habits. They have to learn how to cut out those things that are extras.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got to be creative at looking at ways to make more money. You know, in that situation, I encourage the kids to get involved in, you know, recycling or looking at a little side job. My son recently went and got a little job walking dogs,
mm-hmm.
and he makes $25 a week walking dogs. And
right.
That's great money for him. He's 13
right.
years old. So although you have a limited source of income from your W-2 job, if that's the case, there's no limit to what you can make or bring in with your own company. And
mm-hmm.
I strongly encourage kids to start thinking about entrepreneurism, and that's something that I propose a lot as well, because that's being in control of your destiny, that's being in control of your life, and that's also doing something you love.
Right,
But as far as the spending, you know, you got to spend less and earn more. That's really, I mean, that's not rocket science, and that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. But there's ways to do it. I mean, I've heard people cut out their cable TV. They
mm-hmm.
just, you know, they go down to the basics. You know, again, depending upon the situation, there are ways. But you can put, you know, $5 a week, you know,
that's correct. Yeah.
You know, $10 a month, whatever it is you can do. You know,
you don't need 250 channels. In other words, basically you're telling me you can get
yeah.
down and get by with 24 channels.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, when I grew up, we had, you know, 5 channels on our TV, and we had to get up and manually turn the TV channel to move it. You know, I mean, that's how old I am.
Right.
And we were all too lazy to get off the couch, so we all just sat and watched the same channel.
Right.
We didn't
right.
want to get off the couch. But, you know, the point is that there's always ways. There's always clever ways. You got to think outside the box. You got to get out of that victim role and go, okay, what can I do here to take control of the situation here? Where can I cut? How can I earn more? How can I find, you know, $10 a month? How can I find something? That's just one lunch out, one dinner out.
Right.
One, you know, cut that out and put that away. So there are ways. It's not, you know, easy. Especially if you're on a very limited income, you know, like $50,000
right.
a year, but it can be done.
Well, that's good to know, because one of the things that I think the perception is, when we talk about money, management of money, the general public thinks that, oh well, I don't make enough money to even think about stuff like that. I'm you know, I'm just barely surviving. If I'm not in $100,000, then I don't have you know, this disposable income to put away.
Mm.
And that comes back to full circle, what we talk about paying yourself first and moving forward. So,
right.
And we're not talking about, you know, teaching your kid to, you know, I guess it's not a bad idea, but, you know, teaching your kid to have a, you know, a small lemonade stand and franchise it out in the entire neighborhood. But but it's certainly along those lines. I remember growing up, what my parents did was actually, my mom was the one that, she was the chief operating officer of the house. So
mm-hmm.
she gives out money to my sister and me, you know, for our operating expense or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have enough money for Monday to Friday. And on Saturdays and Sundays, if I want to go out, then I have to be industrious enough to be able to, I guess, generate funds. And in the course of when I was a teenager, I would bring my sister to work every day and charge her for the gas.
Oh, clever.
And so, yeah, so it was quite interesting because I, you know, because rather than her taking public transportation and whatnot, I say, hey, you know, you're safer riding with me and everything else. I had a motorcycle, and I would pick her back and forth to work. And actually, that kind of went off in a tangent because it kind of affected her social life because everybody thought I was a boyfriend.
No.
Yeah, it's really funny because she's 6 years older than I am, but obviously, you know, in the course of growing up, and I outgrew her height-wise and everything else, size-wise,
oh.
and so everyone thought that, you know, I was a boyfriend. And when it was only until when I left home to go to college, and then all the guys was asking her friends that, what happened to Rosalind? You know, did she break up with a boyfriend or something? You know, and like everybody would be telling us that, you idiot, that's her brother. You know,
assumptions. Boy,
Yeah, so it was really funny, you know, about the situations like that. And I remember other instances was like I would take my mom out for a ride or whatever when she wants to go visit my grandmother or something, and I would charge her for it too. And
oh
she didn't
God.
Have any problems, you know, paying for it because, you know, I guess she's teaching me values,
yeah,
you know, about
yeah.
yeah, about things to do that even though it's technically speaking, you're taking money out from the left-hand side pocket to the right-hand side, but the idea is that you're teaching something of value.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. And I think it's important that, you know, you even had that experience at that young
right.
age. You were thinking in those terms, and that's what I'm trying to encourage, you know, kids today to do. I'll share a fast, funny story about my childhood. I grew up in Sherman Oaks, way up in the hills here in California. And we were about 4 or 5 miles up in the hills from the closest market. So it wasn't an easy trip down to the store to, you know, grab what you wanted to grab. So when my mom would go to the market, I'd go with her, and I would buy the boxes of fudgesicles and ice cream sandwich bars and whatnot, and I would then sell them individual. I'd take out, you know, each individual drumstick or whatever, and I'd sell them individually to the neighborhood kids, and I would make, you know, probably double my money on
interesting, yeah.
Because they couldn't, you know, they wanted ice cream, but they couldn't go get it easily. So
right,
we were,
right.
you know, very far away. So then I was probably 9 or 10 when I did that. And that was just my way of, you know, looking at ways to take an opportunity, you know,
right.
take a need of a fellow child in my neighborhood and you know, make some money. And that's what I want kids to be doing now. I want them to think about, you know, what is the need? What's the desire of somebody? How can you feel that need? How can you help somebody eliminate their pain and in the meanwhile, you know, make some money? You know, it's all about being creative. And I think if you are open to that, if you look for those opportunities, if you're not stuck in that victim mindset of, oh, this world is, you know, going to the pits and whatever, but yeah, you turn that around and you are open to that, those opportunities will show themselves.
Right.
And you allow yourself to let those in, and that's what I want kids to see.
Well, let's talk about credit scores, and when does someone's credit score start?
Well, a credit score is much like a grade that you receive in school. FICO, which is Fair Isaac Corporation, basically rates you, if you will. There's the three credit bureaus, Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, and they all will rate you based on your ability to, or what you've shown, your ability to manage your money and repay your bills on time, and they score you. The scores range from 300 to 850, and the average score is in the low 700s. We want to be above 740 to get the best interest rates on mortgages and on car loans, on everything else. A credit score is absolutely vital. You absolutely have to stay on top of your credit score. Again, the interest rate on your mortgage will depend on your credit score, and that will cost you thousands of dollars over the years if you don't get the best score. Interest rates on credit cards, your insurance company. Some insurance companies will pull credit. Some employers will even pull credit before they hire you. They want to see how responsible you've been. If you're not responsible with your money, if you're down in the 500s, that's not showing that you're very responsible. So they're thinking, okay, maybe you aren't really that great of an employee. So it follows you everywhere, and it's absolutely critical that you start to create a credit history, and you create a credit history by having credit cards and having, you know, a car loan, any debt that is recorded through those credit bureaus will build a credit history. If you have a loan from a bank, if you have a line of credit from a bank or credit union, or any of those things are going to start to build a credit history. And, you know, paying on time and, like you talked about, length of credit history is a factor. There's just no question you absolutely have to stay on top of your credit cards. Don't be late on your cards. Your mortgage late will completely annihilate your score. Just you've got to be on that. And once your score is dropped, it takes a while for it to come back up. It drops fast, but it comes up slow. So, you know, it's painful if you let it drop and then trying to get it back. So You know, and things stay on your credit report for years. Bankruptcy will stay on between 7 and 10 years, depending upon whether it's a 7 or 13, you know, your foreclosure, all that stuff is crucial to have, you know, be on your game. So it's so important.
Well, let's talk about the, you know, how you talk about in your book about, you know, we've been talking about savings money and our pennies and everything else, so to speak. But in the last chapter of your book, you talk about giving it all away. Mm-hmm. Well, not all of it, but certainly giving it away. I want you to talk about that because I thought it was a very interesting chapter that everyone needs to know.
Well, I think that it is important to live a life of making a difference and giving back to this world. You know, we're on this planet for a very short time, and I've always, you know, said that, you know, to die with millions in the bank is a tragedy, and I think I even wrote that in the book. And, you know, certainly I want to take care of my son and make sure he's, you know, taken care of. I also think it's important to give back to society. I think it's important you find a organization that you resonate with, whether it's a religious organization or whether it's, you know, Heart Association, Cancer Society, a medical foundation, anything that you feel that touches you, give back in some capacity. If you're not in a position where you can give back financially, give back your time, give back your skills, your talents, donate an hour wherever you can, and volunteering, you know, do something to give something back to the community, come back to the world. It will feed your soul as much as it will feed the souls of those that you touch. And it's not about just accumulating wealth, and that's something that I wove through the entire book. I'm not teaching these money skills and money smarts to people so they can create material wealth.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, you know, driving the biggest car or having the biggest house. It's about financial peace. It's about financial freedom. It's about having choices and options. And part of that choice and option is to give back and to have money to make this world, again, a better place and to leave a legacy, if you will, and know that, you know, when it is your time, that you can look back and go, I feel good about what I've done here, and I think that's crucial, absolutely.
No, that's very true. I inked my book with what my sister sent me about a couple of years ago in a Chinese New Year greeting card, and she wrote this because she's very good about stuff like this too, and it reads this, and I wanted to share this with you because it was very interesting. It kind of go in line with the last chapter of your book. She said, "Health makes all things possible. Wealth makes all things work. Love makes all things beautiful. May you have all three."
Mm.
And people just don't realize that sometimes, you know, this is part of, you know, if you hoard everything that you have, then in the end, you're not happy.
Right.
And so you have to do, you know, a lot more by giving up something. You get a lot more in return, and that's investing in the community you lived in and everything else. Patty, how can our listeners buy your book and your proprietary program, The Prosperous Teen, Where Ordinary Money Habits Create Extraordinary Results, and also contact you for personal coaching?
Well, they can go to my website, which is www.teenscashcoach.com. That's teens with an S. cashcoach.com, and there's information on my book on the homepage. There also information on my DVD program. The DVD program is about 10 hours of basically a money school, but it's done in a very fun, entertaining way so kids can resonate with it. Although it's 10 hours of instruction, it's broken down into 15-minute lessons, so it's very palatable and comfortable, and you can pace it however you like. That's on the homepage as well. I also invite people to sign up for my free Money Minute videos. Those are sent out weekly. You just need to put your first name and your email address and get on my list there. where you are sent once a week a video. It's about 1 or 2 minutes long, and it's a quick money tip, and it's really geared towards the teen, but most parents watch with the teens, and that's free to do, so I encourage you to sign up on there. And I also want to share a free teleseminar that I have coming up on September 24th. It's at 5 o'clock Pacific time, and you can learn more about that free teleseminar and what I'll be covering by going to creatingwealthyteens.com. Again, that's creatingwealthyteens.com, and you'll find the information of what I'll be covering. And that particular call is for parents only, for the parents of teens to join in.
Okay. How has the feedback have you gotten so far from, from the obviously, you've done a lot of coaching for parents and teens. What sort of feedback have you got?
Good. I'm pleased with the response I'm having from my book and DVD program. It's a wonderful feeling to know that I'm, able to guide these teens. Most parents have such a desire to teach this to their parents, to their kids, but they just don't know how to start. They don't know where to begin. And they also have the issue of, which I often have with my own child, and that is that when it comes from a parent, it's a different dynamic. They don't listen to what their parent might say about money, but they will hear it if they hear it from a third person, an expert, if you will. They will relate to it differently.
Right.
So although I am somebody that's a third party, it's somebody that they can relate to in that I'm talking on their level, and so it's been good. I'm real happy. It's been a lot of fun.
That's interesting. What is your website address again?
The website address is www.teenscashcoach.com. It's all one word. No spaces, and teenscashcoach.com.
And they can buy your books at Amazon.com?
They can buy the book at my website or on Amazon. Yeah, either place.
Okay, great. And also they can obviously purchase the your CD sets, right, from your website also.
Yeah, it's actually a DVD. It's all
a DVD.
Yes. Movie. In fact, those DVDs can be played in your television set or on your computer. And, yes, that's right now available only on my website.
Okay, great. Well, we're coming close to the end of the show, and for all guests I have on this show, do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Yes, I sure do. My motto, if you will, or recipe, would be that you live every day that you can be proud of. I think it's critical to be very genuine. Don't try to be someone else. Or fit in someone else's shoes. As I mentioned earlier, be grateful for everything, even the small things that you have in your life. Be kind to everybody. Show that kindness. Although we all have some, live as best you can with no regrets, so that you can go to bed at night and just not regret anything you did that day. And there are certain days where I've had a bad day and something happened and I regret something that I said or did, and we all have those times.
Sure.
But to look back on life as a whole and know that you've done the best that you could and you fulfilled hopefully that purpose that you were brought here for is important. And then I would say that find a way to, as I said earlier, give back and make a difference in people's lives.
Fantastic. Patty, thank you for your great recipes for living and for spending this hour with us on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us this morning. Please join me next Tuesday morning as we continue on our theme From My Mama's Kitchen Recommends. My guest will be Jane White. She is a retired school teacher and an author of Taming of Cocky, a wonderful inspirational children's book about a 9-year-old boy who survived a plane crash that killed his parents. We will be discussing her interesting life's journey as well as her passion for writing. For additional information about this show, future shows, and for my weekly recipes for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com, and you can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/FMMK Talk Radio. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Patty, thank you again and have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Johnny. You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.